I'm Duncan MacLeod, and this is Tech Central's business technology talk show, TCS Plus, brought to you today by InterSystems South Africa. Now, the healthcare industry in South Africa is in a state of flux, not least because of the possible introduction soon of the much-derided NHI scheme. But apart from NHI, there is a lot of complex stuff happening in the local healthcare industry. And to unpack all of that and the role that technology can possibly play in addressing some of the challenges, I'm very pleased to welcome into the studio now Henry Adams. Henry is country manager at InterSystems South Africa and an expert on the healthcare sector. Henry, it's good to see you. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
Pleasure, pleasure. Now, Henry, before we get started, tell me a little bit about InterSystems. Who are InterSystems? When was the company founded? What do they do?
Right, so InterSystems is a privately held US company. It was established 45 years ago in the Cambridge area in Massachusetts. It is still owned by the original founder of the business, a gentleman, Terry Reagan. Mm-hmm. And today, it's an organization that's got about 37 offices around the world, all held by InterSystems. We have an enormous footprint in the healthcare sector. Mm-hmm. Also in other sectors such as financial services, shipping, distribution, so on. But the largest sector is healthcare. And as a company, we provide both what are referred to as data platforms, which are rated by organizations such as Gartner and others and reviewed by them. And then we also focus specifically on solutions in healthcare.
Okay.
Working either with partners or some of our own solutions.
And is it fair to assume then that the principal focus of InterSystems in South Africa is also the healthcare industry?
Yes. So we do have partners who work in financial services, mining, and a few of the other sectors, but the predominant sector is healthcare, which is in line with the operations around the world.
Yeah, okay.
And we set up, Terry opened an office here 22 years ago. I was involved in the opening of the office and have been with InterSystems ever since.
Okay. How big is the team?
The team, we have 10 people, but what needs to be understood is that we work extensively with partners who have quite a lot of legs on the ground, and then also with very large IT shops within organizations who typically have the legs. So ours is often the product sets and the domain expertise, and then working along with partners and large IT shops to deploy, to implement and deploy solutions.
Okay. Now, we're going to spend a good portion of the interview today talking about data in the healthcare industry, how it's shared, how systems integrate with one another or how they don't, and the role of electronic medical records. But before we get there, Henry, maybe just paint me a picture of what the healthcare industry in South Africa looks like today. What's working well in this industry? What's not working so well? And what are some of the changes coming down the line, of course, in the context of the NHI as well?
Yes. So I think there needs to be a fundamental understanding that we have the public sector and the private healthcare sector.
Okay.
So for the 60-odd million people that are in South Africa, about 50 million are serviced by the public sector, the other 10 million by the private sector, and a similar amount of funding is and economic activity happens in both sides. Mm-hmm. So it does give you a sense of the disparity. So there is a lot of mix really between, call it a first world setting and a third world setting. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think the dynamics are quite different across those two sectors.
Well, let's talk about the private sector healthcare industry first then. There are a lot of players there. I know as a healthcare consumer that there's almost an endless choice of medical insurance schemes that I can choose from and a panoply of private healthcare providers as well. How integrated is this industry? What are some of the issues that the private participants are facing?
Yeah. So I think traditionally in all parts of the world, healthcare service delivery has been fairly broken down with different specializations, people working in different areas. Over time, radiology developed or pathology or service providers. So the background is one of a very distributed and broken down landscape,
yeah.
A fragmented landscape. Yeah, yeah. So obviously, if you look at it from with the cost pressures that are coming through and the need to improve clinical outcomes, you know, we know from a system point of view, you want to get some cohesion across these environments. Mm. And within private sector in South Africa, one of the fundamental structural issues in private medicine is that all doctors work for themselves. They may not work for a hospital group, for example, and practice medicine. They can work for hospital group, but they can't practice medicine.
Interesting.
And the doctor, the hospital groups, be it Netcare, Life, smaller ones, LenMed, MediClinic, they're not allowed to employ doctors or healthcare specialists. So they can employ nurses, but they cannot employ healthcare specialists.
What's the reason for that?
This is an old historical structural thing going way back into the 1920s, 30s, when medicine started being practiced in a bigger way within the country, and clinicians wanted to keep their independence. They felt they didn't want to have external factors influencing them. But I think the world's gone way past that point. Mm-hmm. So, for example, last week I was in Dubai. There's a very integrated approach where healthcare, which takes a large amount of investment, in that setting, the doctors and specialists, labs can all be owned by the hospital groups, for example. They can still contract outsiders in. Mm. But you get a far more efficient and effective business model. So the data starts to be collected at the point at which the data is generated usually. And this is just basic system stuff. It's like the bank. You go to the ATM, you draw your money, the transaction gets recorded there and then.
Yeah.
So what you want to try to do is ensure you're collecting all the appropriate data. And it mustn't just be about billing. So in South Africa, a lot of it's about billing and does the medical aid approve the procedure I want to have next week?
Mm-hmm.
We need to collate the clinical data. So trying to give it a slight historical perspective or a time trend is, at the end of the day, healthcare is about extending people's lives. And, you know, you had things like the X-rays discoveries in the almost the turn of the century just before. You had antibiotics come along in the 1930s around that time. And all these things had a major impact on the extending of humans' lives. And the claim now is that data is going to be able to do the same thing. So we need to approach this problem with a great awareness that the data needs to be collected. And I think Google, business models, others have shown us that this certainly is the way of the future. And then if we layer on top of that modern developments around artificial intelligence, large language models, these things are all very data dependent.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to collect the data. And currently, the structure of the industry is that fragmented. There are so many separate business interests. So you have the funders with their interests. You have the hospital group, which is providing an infrastructure and a facility and theatres. You have specialist groups. Typically, for example, if a blood test is required, it goes to an external pathology organisation. They've also got their interests. A fundamental challenge is that in a healthcare system, a major cost driver is, for example, one of the cost drivers is the cost of pathology, blood tests. So everybody talks about reducing the repeat orders of blood tests, like you hear about it also in pharmacy, repeat orders, stopping the repeat orders. But the fundamental model is that you want to have blood tests done once.
Mm-hmm.
But if we look at it with a different set of glasses, even the pathology organizations would rather have the blood test done once. But if it comes a second or third time, who really cares? And these things drive up costs, and they reduce the service level that an uneducated patient, whether private or public, receives. And at the end of the day, all these costs go into a pool the funders, the insurers, they try to manage these costs. But to be quite frank, at the end of the day, theirs is a spreadsheet exercise, and they will just up the premium because they need to carry on. So there needs to be a fundamental reassessment from a system, a structural point of view. And my one suggestion or thought would be, well, for starters, large hospital groups, funders, whomever they are, should be able to go and employ doctors and specialists and physiotherapists and people that, and the cost of the value chain will come down. The data will get collected because not everybody is only collecting the data from their own perspective.
Why is the industry so siloed? Is it because these groups and these healthcare organizations tend to work very separately from one another, or is it a case of them actually wanting to protect their turf? This is our customer data. You can't have
it. Well, that's what it's become. It's not their data. It's the patient's data. But they are learning the importance of the data. So when there is a cooperative venture, for example, Care Connect in the private healthcare industry, there is always a concern of the people through whom the data is collected, be it funders or insurers, you know, as to there's a level of, well, you know, that data's coming from us.
It's very private, often, data that you don't want to necessarily share. I mean, I might go to my doctor and get a diagnosis of some horrible disease that I don't necessarily want my medical aid to know about for whatever reason. In an environment where the sort of information is being shared freely between organizations, there's a risk of that happening. How do you control that?
All right. So there's a lot of law globally, and South Africa has followed that in terms of consent and privacy management. So within the US, it's called HIPAA. In Europe, it's called GDPR, for protection of privacy. And in South Africa, we have POPIA. And POPIA aligns quite closely with GDPR. So within the automation of any process, particularly if it's clinical, serious consideration has to be given to consent and also to participate. So, for example, if you don't want your clinician to know you have a particular condition, if they have access to your medications, they will know what other conditions you may have.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of nuances around that, whether you're a minor and have a guardian or when you become an adult. There's a lot of sophistication. There's a lot of complexity in healthcare systems, particularly if they're looked at from a patient point of view. And with the industry historically having been developed on such a disparate basis and people over time wanting to protect their own interests, there are need for interventions, but certainly not of the level as currently laid out, and maybe we'll get to it later in terms of the NHI transformation. So, for example, in the US, there were developments, the idea of Obamacare. Well, a lot of that was just really to get disparate healthcare organizations to share and exchange information about patients. How many diabetics? How many people overweight? How many smokers do we have in a state? Where are they? What are their medical conditions? So that it can then be managed appropriately and in a cost-effective way.
What would this look like from a technical perspective? Do you take patient data and store it on a central database somewhere? I imagine there's inherent risk associated with that from a cybersecurity perspective, but from a privacy perspective as well. Or do you have some sort of federated model where there's interoperability between all of the healthcare providers?
Right. So the general trend is to get rather to have centralized repositories of data. But you can't have every piece of data in a single place. So federated becomes important. Interoperability in healthcare from a technical point of view is exceptionally important. So what you find, for example, in the areas like the NHS, each trust has a digital backbone which supports healthcare protocols. There are protocols, so not everything is, for example, web services.
Sure.
There are healthcare-specific protocols, a thing called HL7, There's another thing called IHE. There's another thing now called FHIR, F-H-I-R. These are all protocols which allow you to exchange clinical data in a secure manner.
Interesting. So it's like the internet protocol, but for medical information.
For healthcare.
Okay.
Yes. So when you're deploying, because we're typically talking mostly about deploying systems at scale.
Yeah. Yeah.
And obviously the advent of the large data centers, cloud computing, all these things have assisted and contribute to this. Yes, you still have the issues of security. You know, so we typically have security, privacy, and consent. Those are three things you've got to look and be aware of. Mm-hmm. And what happens is that within an IT landscape, often people are wanting, I just need to develop this little system, or somebody wants to develop a system, or government says, let's just get a bit of open source components and let's put them together and we'll write it. You know, we've got some bright computer science students sitting in Pretoria or Cape Town. But this extreme complexity in healthcare and complexity in IT, and that crossover, there are not many players who truly understand that overlap and being able to be focused on it in the long term. And I think that's one of the big value adds of an organization such as InterSystems. They have quite a lot of clinicians and specialists on staff, and it's that fusion of healthcare and technology, not just for today, but also looking to move forward.
Right. But to have this interoperability, and we're talking about disparate IT systems here, probably different database systems,
sure,
all using potentially different protocols to communicate.
Yes.
Getting the systems, let's just say the main private hospital groups, for example, to all get into a position where they can share data, what's actually involved? Is it simply a matter of putting in a piece of middleware that allows the information to be shared between these organizations, or is it more complicated than that?
It's a bit more complicated than that, but the middle, when we speak interoperability, we're really referring largely to the middle, the traditional middleware piece.
Okay.
Okay. So within a large hospital group, within a setting like South Africa, it's really important that they have interfaces through to the pathology and the radiology. These are two huge cost components in a healthcare delivery system.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is actually pharmacy, the three big 400-pound gorillas, you know. But typically the pathology and the radiology, because a clinician is really, he's lost, he's stuck. If he's practicing clinical medicine, he needs a blood result.
Yeah.
And he needs it accurate, must be timeous, must have quality. And the interoperability, the healthcare interoperability standards and products ensure that if a request is made for a test or a result is sent back, that this is very well managed so that people can be confident in the in the result that they receive.
Just briefly, just coming back to the NHI, do you think the NHI is going to help with any of this, or does it simply add more complexity to an already fairly complex operating environment?
I think it adds complexity because of the generates quite a lot of noise, but maybe some noise is required in order to get people to focus on re-engineering an industry or parts of an industry. I think in terms of the NHI, you know, nobody can debate about universal healthcare and the benefits and healthcare for all and all these great objectives. The question is, how do you do it? And I think certainly for us, because half the investment in healthcare is currently made by the private industry. And I think that the proposals go too far in terms of wanting to restructure such a large and complex. And the danger is, if we use an old English expression, that we could end up throwing the baby out with the bathwater. That really is a real concern. And in healthcare, the one side is the funding and the funding models, and then the other side is the service delivery, the clinics and the hospitals and so on. And these things need to be in balance. So it's no good going after and getting control of all the funding and then service delivery, what happens on that side, that it drops off. So if too much pressure is put on the private healthcare industry, who provide a very good, they provide a good service, but there are high costs associated with it because of these structural things we've been talking about. I think there are a lot of areas within the healthcare domain, and this is also plays out internationally, where there is space for more cooperation between public and private. So whether that's around a disease type, mm-hmm. or whether it's around a physical geography, or there are many different areas, could be treatment of diabetics, work could be done more cooperatively on HIV, where there's a lot of donor funding also comes in, but that's all fairly strictly controlled through government.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of areas. And I think one of the things that does need to, is required to help change some of the behavior we see in the private industry is some legislation. So be it the Obamacare's, be it what happens, be it in an Australian setting or a UK setting, there certainly is need for more.
The government needs to decide the rules because the private sector can't just go out there
correct,
and do its own thing.
Correct. And they've also got to decide the rules, you know, in a sense for themselves, but we sit with this third world and the first world complexity, and the guys deciding the rules are tightly coupled with people sitting in the public service.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, but 10 years ago, I went off for a meeting. I've been talking to with various government representatives since, you know, just after the year 2000.
Okay.
But, you know, putting forward proposed solutions that, for example, we do quite a lot of work in the Western Cape. Stuff that we're doing there was really good in helping recover funding from people who were making use of public facilities who should have been paying some money.
Mm-hmm.
When you discuss this in a building sitting in Pretoria, and you are told by a civil servant person not to talk about those people here, you know, it leads you to the point where basically a lot of our people are suffering. Elderly ladies are waiting in queues for days, having to come back to fetch meds because there's a philosophical, there are too many philosophical things that are playing, coming into the discussion mm-hmm. at too many levels. And the problems are complex enough. You don't need that. I think if government could focus really on setting the rules and controlling and administering the rules and ensuring they're effective. You know, so the quality of the service that is delivered.
Mm.
Now, I know that's an intention within NHI. Years ago, some funding was used from a European funder to help identify, to do a review of all clinics and look at quality and standards and infrastructure and power and all these good things. But none of this seems to end up playing through.
Which is a theme I think we see again and again. Great ideas, no implementation.
Yes.
Or little implementation.
Sadly. So I would say on the government side, I think people have done really well is the NHLS and the Bud Bank. So NHLS is a single state-owned enterprise. It does all the pathology.
Right.
For all, there are 400 public hospitals, 3,500 clinics. They've got about 300 individual labs, and all those tests are being done online, real-time, through a single central system. So that's why when COVID was on the go, the stats were being presented on television every night, because a lot of the data was being collected. Privates were also contributing data, but the bulk of the data, I mean, the NHLS is doing maybe 150 to over 500,000 tests a day.
Wow.
That's lots and lots of data. That's TB, HIV, academic medicine, the old lady visiting a clinic. And all of this must be done to a level of international clinical quality. So government has done a really good job at NHLS, because NHLS originally was four separate old provincial structured systems. It took them till the early 2000s to force the last of the regions, which was KZN, to come on. You know, KZN had 55 labs, three labs had computers.
Mm.
They then put in this new system. They had 55 labs, and within a year, the system was up and running. Mm. And the great thing was, everyone was concerned about, oh, but the people won't know how to use the computer, they won't know how to do this, they won't know how to do that. Well, what absolute nonsense. Mm. The people who became the best supporters of the system were the people on the bench and the people who were capturing the test requests and so on. Mm-hmm. So government has done a very good job there. I think they do a good job within the areas of blood bank as national services. The healthcare model is a provincial model in terms of the hospitals and the clinics. The Western Cape have been doing a good job. There are other pockets of excellence, but I think a lot of this gets lost in provincial politics and cities and provinces and unions. And But, you know, we have 50 health districts across the country. I see no reason why two or three of these districts couldn't be looked at and an IT enablement plan developed by that district's management in cooperation with the trade union representatives, in cooperation with the clinicians who operate within the public service there, and create an IT enablement plan. Mm-hmm. It's not for people who know what they're doing. This is not difficult stuff. Mm-hmm. And it really would have a huge impact on the quality of care that the people who are serviced, you know, we always think of elderly African woman looking to collect tablets or medications or whatever. And there are a lot of NGOs doing a lot of great work and so on. But I think the capital that works its way into the public healthcare system currently is immediately absorbed into many other areas. Sadly, there isn't the capital. We need to see a level of cooperation between private industry who've got some skills and can possibly raise some capitals and can possibly move a little quicker, working in a cohesive manner with maybe a specific district. My sense is a province is almost too big. They need to be involved, or national need to be involved. But you've got to see what size bite do you need to take of this elephant that is manageable and is sustainable. So I think those things could be actually achieved quite easily. But government are focused at a central level on working along with CSR, trying to develop applications or developing applications, which many in the private industry don't have insight to. Mm-hmm. So there's not an avenue for you to play a role or to make a contribution. I think that's a challenge.
How much information sharing? I mean, you mentioned the provincial structure, but how much information sharing is there in the public healthcare system? If I go to a public hospital here in Johannesburg to see a doctor, nothing.
The only province with a master patient index, which is a basic fundamental building block of any IT system, whether you're at Checkers in retail or whatever you're at, you need to be able to identify that customer. There's only one province with a proper functioning master patient index. Now, the private industry.
Which province is that?
Western Cape.
Western Cape.
And the private industry has gone and created this through Care Connect. So the three big hospital groups, the three big funders, put some money in a kitty, set up a not for profit, and within 2 years, they have a functioning health information exchange where consent is ensured, privacy is ensured, the medical aides and them in their communication with their members, they communicate to the members about this. They ask them whether they would like to participate or not. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to have your data in there. And, I mean, they've got in, I think, over 5 million patients' information. Now, the amount of patient information at this time is still, I would say, quite thin. Mm-hmm. A very good, strong master patient index. Some information about conditions that people may have, allergies, whatever. But what we need to do is we need to get the pathology data in. We need to get the radiology data in. So, and these guys got their work cut out in ensuring that there is an effective contribution and buy-in from these, because some of these things do result in some structural change. But the ability to identify a person, it really is fundamental to building a system to service patients.
Should this be opt-in or opt-out for patients, do you think?
I think that you should be part of it, and you may opt out if you wish, which I think is more the Spanish-type model.
Right. Okay. So if you don't want to participate, you have to elect that you don't want to participate.
That's right. And some of this raises big issues. It's like, if you die all of a sudden, may parts of your – could your heart be used for a heart transplant without your consent or something like that? So I think around the world there are different views and different models. So South Africa needs to look at itself and decide what is it that we require. I think to be practical about it, I think you really an individual needs to either be in or out because of the complexities of issues such as if a doctor reads my medications, he can tell what condition I have, even if I said, okay, I don't want anybody to know I had this condition. So what happens on these more advanced systems is that it would be highlighted. There would be an asterisk. There would be a star. Something would be brought to the attention of the clinician that he is not viewing all the data.
Right.
Then obviously he may have a conversation with the patient or whatever the outcome of that may be. But economically, the basic fundamental of being able to just collect all these little components of data or of conditions is really, really important to building up something that would allow the entire system to run at a lower cost with better outcomes.
Is it in the financial interests of the healthcare providers to adopt a system like this?
Okay, so when we talk healthcare providers, if we talk, about hospital groups,
broadly,
or are we talking GP? No.
There's no financial incentive.
No.
So there's going to have to be a push.
They need to do it, absolutely. If you take a fairly, they want to do it. They are prepared to invest. We're starting to see these big hospital groups invest. But they were looking at these systems 20 years ago.
Right.
We were showing them to all and sundry. But so I think it is reaching a point where they do see the benefit of collating all that data.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because they've got to negotiate with the funders.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because they do seriously worry about infection control and repeating, but if you go into a hospital and you get given some meds and then you get given a few extra meds or second script, who cares?
Mm.
But the problem is all those little bits are all cost components that add up to a large system.
What would an integrated system – I imagine there's a lot of abuse that goes on in the medical industry as well. Patients, for example, abusing drugs and going to different doctors to secure their supply.
Sure.
Would an integrated system like this help crack down on abuses like that?
Absolutely. So if it was built on the basis, because most data is generated in our system in private between a GP and a patient. That's where most of the activity really happens. So you need to... That's where you need to gather the data.
Mm.
But the GP's not wanting to be managed. He's not wanting to be monitored. He'd tell you to get lost.
Mm-hmm.
So unless he's an IT fanatic. And this is also what the Obamacare thing was. They actually provided funding. They told the GPs, you need to implement electronic medical records and we want the following information from you. We'll pay you to do it now, but we're telling you in a few years' time, if you haven't done it, we're going to start to fine you.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a model to re-engineer, and they had the capital base and the funding to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But this abuse by people who run from one pharmacy to another, to one GP to another, and it's very real. I mean, I have a wife who works for a doctor. And these challenges are not that difficult to solve if you pull the right people together. So if you have electronic medical record system or repository, The doctor could either be running his own little system, but he needs a real-time link into the central repository. And it needs to be a central repository so they know who I am. They may also have access to what my hospital admissions have been, what medications I'm on. The pharmacies can get access to it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're seeing this big development of these pharmacy chains, and it's around the world, all starting clinics.
Mm-hmm.
Clicks are doing it. All the other guys are doing it. CVS Health in the US are a big one. So if you just step back for a moment, that abuse that happens within the pharmacy, and it's not pharmaceutical companies, of course they don't want the abuse. But you know what? They make a little more money when it happens.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not to be to slight them in any way, but it's just sort of, you know, that's the reality. So people do want to change it. But how do you push that last piece to actually transform something?
And that's where the government needs to.
They need to legislate.
Or regulate.
Or the industry must create a regulator of its own. So I think you've seen that in private, and not just in healthcare, but in there. And there have been various attempts to sort of self-regulate.
Okay.
But it's not an easy thing. But I think if they looked at where are the big cost areas, what are the things that are really having an impact on patients, I'm quite sure certain programs could be designed. And to me, that would be, you know, you'd have to take maybe a 10-year view. Maybe you set 3-year goals, 6-year goals, 10-year goals, I think.
You mentioned AI a few moments ago and big data and the advantage of having access to all this information. And I mean, what sort of role do you see AI software and machine learning playing in the healthcare sector in South Africa going forward? I mean, do you think that applying AI rules against South African patient information is going to unearth information that's going to help the medical industry treat patients better? Or is it going to unearth trends that perhaps doctors weren't aware of? What role do you see big data playing in all of this?
Big data is going to be huge across the landscape. If for a moment we just think or reflect on that, a lot of the clinical data is not collated. Mm-hmm. So we're not talking, but the funders have enormous repositories of data.
Yeah.
People at NHLS, all those tests for 15 years, 500,000 a day, there's data there.
Mm.
Okay. But I think, you know, what people need to understand is that AI and machine learning, it's a very large landscape, and there are different types of AI and learning. So some are it's more important to understand privacy issues around privacy and consent and so on. So some of you know the old, an area where it was used many years ago, and it's just matured a lot since then, is comparing images. So you now have AI-type engines which can look at X-ray material and actually predict as to what might be the diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
So that has matured a lot. But the other areas, such things as, okay, what is the probability that in the Western Cape, what percentage of the population are going to become diabetics by the time they're 50?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, run through the data and tell me. Okay, we don't have that. If you don't have that data, you can't run it. You could look at a study that maybe happened somewhere else in the world or was relevant. All I know is that AI, machine learning, these worlds of big data are going to have an enormous impact. And like many things coming into the market, lots of people doing lots and lots of different things. And over time, it will distill itself out. And I think you'll get fewer, players, repositories. You'll get certain verticalization. So certain people will be focusing on machine learning, other things in healthcare who understand the domain. There might be others focusing in the legal market, which is a very good market because there's lots of written word and so on as well. So all I can say is it's going to have an enormous impact. As to how, when, so on, I think that that's a lot more difficult to predict.
And it's still early days.
Yeah.
Just looking at the role of the government, we've spoken about how the industry is unlikely to do a lot of what we've been talking about here today without a bit of a nudge.
Yes. What
does that nudge look like?
Okay. I think the nudge is coming because NHI has been announced.
Okay. So NHI,
NHI is making the private industry do some introspection and look at itself.
And that's a good thing.
Is an excellent thing. Mm-hmm. So it's like a big stick, a carrot and stick. So I think that things like NHI Health Market Inquiry, which was a big thing that happened, suggested certain structural reforms. We'll still have to see those really come through. So I think it's a good catalyst for change.
Right.
It's a great catalyst for change. And the warning bell has been rung for the players. So I think government's got a really difficult task. There are a lot of hello good people. They're doing a lot of good work. But they are so stressed in terms of resource size and capability and budgets. I mean, you're even seeing national budgets in provinces being shrink. I mean, you know, and you sit back and you think, how on earth is that even remotely possible? Well, it's happened. It is possible, and it's happened. So the efficiencies and effectiveness, implementing appropriate systems that are absolutely rock solid, that have got longevity almost built into them, not trying to develop some little bits and pieces and think, oh, we'll write a system, we'll put in this clinic here. You know what? And we might be able to run three clinics, and in a few years we'll be running the whole country with it. Mm-hmm. Well, that's like trying to run South Africa on an Excel spreadsheet. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I think sometimes there's just a fundamental lack of understanding of some of the complexities in that. And also I think at a political level or a decision-making level, whether it's in a city, because the cities also run clinics and things like that, or, you know, they're each sort of trying to do their own thing. But I think there's a fundamental lack of appreciation of the importance of having rock-solid IT components on which on which systems run.
Does the NHS or the NHI deal with that at all?
Well, from what I understand, they feel they've developed quite a lot of the stuff already, and I'm a little skeptical. Mm-hmm. I'm more than a little skeptical. But we'll see. I think they're trying to focus a bit more on the funder side at the moment and how they might have systems that would manage collection of funds and so on. I don't know. On the service delivery side, you know, they can't there's a structure where they are running initiatives and then you have each of the nine provinces and everything. Everyone's got their own problems. So I don't see a lot of progress maybe just there.
Is NHI going to be implemented, do you think? I mean, there's been so much pushback from the private sector, threats of lawsuits, business saying we're going to challenge this in the Constitutional Court. Does it actually see the light of day?
Not in the full form as which it is tabled at the moment. Mm-hmm. I just can't. The fights will be too long, too expensive. There's just and too ideological, and my concern is it ends up driving players away from each other,
right?
Rather than towards what we need is we need a forum or a structure or processes through which cooperation can be facilitated, and people who don't like each other already are going to have to find some way to sit down and put the patient's interests first, because they all claim they're the ones that look after the patients, and the other guys are. Mm-hmm. You know, don't. But I think what we need is not so much that legislation, but more an identification of what sort of processes and controls do we need in place to facilitate a cooperation. And out of that, hopefully, would come, we'll hear 10 different projects or areas where the objectives can be shared. you know, because obviously privates are not going to be keen to go and build some big hospital in the middle of nowhere, you know, and sadly that responsibility falls on government. I think also, I think in terms of the privates, I think they want to play a role, but they are battling to see their way through all of this, what they see as a threat.
And so you could
in
end
its
up-
current form, I really hope that there is a reassessment. I know that some of the NHI stuff was pushed quite hard because we've got an election coming up and people want to be able to claim victory and so on.
Yeah,
I understand that stuff. But hopefully after the at some period within the next 12, 24 months, there can be a really serious attempt at facilitating that, because government don't have the money to do all the stuff they want to do. The privates, they're not going to, guys are going to take their money, they're going to invest in
somewhere else,
in mines or something, you know?
Or go offshore.
Or go offshore, you know? Or go, you know, all sorts of things can happen. But I really do think at the end of the day, we have this divide of private and public, and what we need to do, you know, almost like the rugby team, we need to be able to get past that stuff. We really got to be able to. I mean, we're big boys, you know. This is nonsense. And what technology does, it gives you a way through which things can be transformed. So if you take something like Care Connect, which knows exactly who 5.2 million people are in the country, they know stuff, and it's consented and it's proper, why doesn't government sit with them and say, okay, guys, can't we extend this into HIV program or some other program, or, you know, why not? They, within government, they're trying to, they have for many years spent enormous amounts of money looking to build a system, the HPRS system, which will provide an HPRN number. Well, you know, NHLS, we're still waiting to see where this stuff is.
Yeah.
10 years later. So somehow we've got to get past, and maybe the first month or two would just be people, maybe a bit like me, moaning or pouring their hearts out, whatever you might call it. But people genuinely, people, it's an emotional topic. People want to make a contribution. People want their organizations to make a contribution. You know.
But there's this risk of polarization happening now.
Absolutely. Well, it's well on its merry way.
Yeah. And it's government entrenching its position, and the private sector entrenching its position.
It needs to be stopped.
Yeah.
So, you know, how do we stop it? We need some skunks works to take place. Maybe it can happen at a within a province or a district or somebody, because these things can go back up the hierarchy and fall into the political hierarchy, and then no, they won't do it. So somehow I don't have a simple answer.
Okay.
If we can attract investment, you know, and get the privates already and get further investment, government must create an environment in healthcare where it's easier for people to invest. So let these guys employ all the specialists. Let them let these guys make their labor available for sale. Make it, you know, more willing buyer, willing seller. Yes, you must have some controls, but set a landscape where people can invest with confidence, because to build a hospital or hospital groups and to run them, you know, it's almost like mines. It takes many years to get your returns. So government needs to protect these guys who are happy to invest and give them an environment within which they can get the returns. And you monitor them. I mean, these guys aren't just going to be able to rip the ring out of everything, and they won't. I mean, I think a lot of the – I think generally investors in South Africa are conscious of the role they play within the society we have. So it's not just take whatever you can.
You've painted a picture of a very complex industry with a lot of challenges facing it. But before we conclude, I just wanted to get your insights into how you see InterSystems playing a role in all of this. Where does InterSystems fit into this picture, and what solutions can you bring to the table?
So I think that, so we've been here 22 years. And in that time, I think we've built up a footprint within healthcare and more healthcare where there is a bit of a clinical orientation. So we are helping people like the NHLS. We're helping some of the other private pathology players. I would say 3/4 of pathology tests in South Africa today touch on our technology somewhere, which is enormous. Care Connect has been an initiative that we work together with this cooperative forum to design and develop and implement. So I think the role for us is being part of some of the conversations, the initial conversations. So if people are looking to do something at scale in an enterprise type fashion, be it public or private or not for profit, or be it in mining, I think there's a lot of value we can bring because of this global expertise that we have. We can relate very quickly. People may have been doing in Chile, people, what are they doing in China? What they're doing in Indonesia. It's not all first world stuff. A lot of it is in non-first world countries. So understanding the challenges of those environments. So for us, in South Africa, we have over 20 years, we've now built a very strong and sustainable business with very good annuity income. So we're proudly a good contributor to the global pot, but it's not, we don't have quarterly targets. We hardly have an annual target. It's more about doing the right thing. We're exceptionally privileged. We're in an environment where the business globally is enormously successful, and it allows you to stay away from trying to get contracts.
Right.
It allows you the privilege of being able to try to solve some serious problems. So for InterSystems, we've been going this 45 years, just moved to major new corporate headquarters, a vision for the next 45 years, the continual investment. So in the IT business, in healthcare, there's a whole lot of people who need the data platforms and the interoperability. They need the toolkit on top of which to write applications. So the biggest supplier of medical record software in the world is Epic Systems in the US. They have their package running on our data platform. In the NHS, a lot of these, different 70-odd, the units, they have the regional units in the NHS model for delivery of healthcare services. They each have a digital backbone. So very involved there. We're involved in a lot of the standards organizations in terms of, for example, mobility in healthcare and how do you ensure from mobile device to back end that you're getting the appropriate data. So a lot of contribution there. We did help in the very early days, even when CSIR, from a request from government, we're looking at interoperability, and they produced a document in 2012 called Normative Standards for Healthcare Interoperability in South Africa. In about 2007, 2008, we were making a contribution to those conversations. There's no direct business benefit in that for us, but it did help contribute to the pool of thinking, which then resulted in a number of kids doing doctorates and other things in these areas of IT and of the normative standards document, which has then more recently been updated.
Right.
So I think for us, I think it's really focusing on more of the same, focusing on looking to play a role in solving these large healthcare problems. We're in a very privileged position in the public sector. We have a footprint in the NHLS and in the Western Cape. We would love to entertain discussions in other areas and try and help people solve some of their healthcare problems. And in the privates, I think more of the same of what we're doing, engaging with the big service providers, possibly engaging more with the funders. The retailers now, people who are traditionally retail are getting into this type of world. So I think the future for us looks very bright. because we now have this rock solid business, and we're able to look at trying to really make add value more than make money, and solve some of these problems. So I think we're well positioned for that.
So if anyone wants to learn more about InterSystems or reach out to you guys, what's the best way of doing that?
All right. I suppose like all good tech companies, we have a very comprehensive website. Mm-hmm. They can reach out to the .com or .co's, the InterSystems website. Or we have our office in Johannesburg, and we would welcome any engagement, be it through email or phone calls, whatever, and just to start more conversations.
Excellent. So it's intersystems.co.za is the South African address, and intersystems.com, the global website.
Yes.
Excellent. Henry Adams is country manager for InterSystems in South Africa. This has been a fascinating conversation. Thank you so much for sharing your insights with Tech Central today. It's much appreciated.
Good. Thank you, Duncan.